It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Celtic Down Under Weekend Review. My name is Anthony Maguire, and this week I'm joined by Richard Tobin and Paul Massey as we dissect Dundee 1, Celtic 2, Dens Park last night. Perth time. As you can see, it's gone a little bit cooler here. It was only 23, 24 degrees during the day today, but we're all sort of rugged up as if it's winter already. Richard, well, Paul's not, but me and Richard are. Richard, how was your weekend, mate?
Yeah, it was good. I've been harvesting olives. Honestly, I've been harvesting olives, and like, it's not like something a guy from Glasgow. Oh, just harvesting my olives this weekend, and unfortunately, I don't have any Greek or Italian neighbours that I can actually ask what to do. So I'm relying on the internet, and I'm not sure that any of this will work. However, I promise to share them with you when I find out whether or not it did work, and I'll lie and buy a jarred stuff if it didn't. Okay.
fair enough. Not the there's companies down south. I know Olio Bellio. They let you take your own olives and then they'll crush them in the oil for you. I've done it a couple of years ago. It's a fun day doing it. But with olive oil prices going through the roof, Richard, because apparently a third of the Italian peninsula is drought stricken. So you might actually have liquid gold in your backyard at the moment. You just didn't know it.
Exporting 200 mils.
Yeah, pretty much. Paul, how was your weekend, mate?
Well, it didn't involve any harvesting of olives, organs, or anything else. I had a long weekend, didn't I? So we all had the public holiday Thursday, or some of us had the public holiday Thursday. You'll tell me that you were working. So I took Friday to get it 4 days. So yeah, I had a fantastic time. The weather was great. You're right, it's cooled down a little bit today, but it was brilliant over the weekend. Two or three days out with the dogs and my wife, and some nice lunch spots, cheap and cheerful, but yeah, brilliant weekend. And then, albeit a little bit nerve shredding, topped off with the result we all wanted. So yeah, great weekend all round. Late finish for us, midnight here in Perth. By the time it finished yesterday, we were just chatting about off air. So all a little bit tired today. Monday's never the best day of the work week anyway, but after a late night and not enough sleep, it's a bit of a slog, but here we are to chat about all things Celtic.
Yes, so it's been less than 24 hours since we've had the chance to digest it. I had a pretty quiet weekend because spot the two healthcare workers, we don't actually know what a public holiday is. Anyway,
the smallest violin in the world, right?
I had a pretty quiet weekend. I could have went to the doctors on Saturday night, but I didn't want to bother with the trains and everything. So I decided to sit and watch on my couch. And that was a bit like watching Celtic. It really took to the death to get that one over the line as well. So it was kind of like a pre-run of like what the game was going to be like on Sunday night. And went to have a nice brunch at Hank's Corner, around the corner, a nice walk from my place, which was nice. And here we are. So I've got a few comments already. Got one here saying, James Forrest, legends. Yes, that is the title of today's podcast. James Forrest or Jamesy Forrest to the double. We've got Northampton Tim saying, afternoon, evening, boys. Yep, good evening to you. Patrick McLaughlin, hail, hail, two wins from the title now. Let's do it. Yeah, I love your optimism. We'll get
only
to that.
Only two home wins.
Only two home wins. Only against the second and third teams in the league. But that, let's not go there just yet. And then who's the next saying, hail, hail, gentlemen, good afternoon. Good afternoon to you. Hello, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for listening. 27 of you live so far. That number is climbing as I speak. Let's get into it. So the only change to the lineup before the match was James Forrest coming in place of Yang. I think the debate in most Celtic podcasts, including ours last week and you know the ones I was sort of patching up when and all the Twitter chat, was that Yang hadn't done enough to keep that starting spot. So it was a bit of a coin flip. Is it going to be Palmer or was it going to be James Forrest, with the fact that Maeda's, although apparently back training or about to become back training, he's not obviously not quite available just yet. So Richard, I'll throw to you first. I know you're a bit of a James Forrest long-term fan club member. How stoked, happy, ecstatic were you to see him starting again? Because that's his first start since, I think, October last year or something like that. I remember Ian Crocker rhyming that. Mr. Statsman just rhyming off all the stats. But how are you feeling going into this one? Because obviously, you know, Rangers came unstuck at Dens Park a week ago, a week and a half ago. So, you know, we knew it wasn't going to be an easy game. So what were you feeling?
Optimistic. I am the anointed James Forrest. In fact, I can't believe James Forrest isn't a Lisbon Lion. He's been there that long. I really, really enjoyed watching him. I thought he finds gaps that no one else this season has found, and has a more expressive freedom in his play. He really energised that left side. Scored the first goal, was an absolute beauty. But I know we'll talk about it later on. But yeah, I mean, just great to see him. I think Brendan Rodgers made the point after the game, high intensity, he has been a bit injury prone, but lovely to see him looking probably as good as he's been for a very long time, and gave a good 60, 70 minutes account of himself. Loved it.
Yeah, no, I must admit, he's looking fit. Like, he doesn't look like he's carrying any, you know, excess weight. I know that's rich coming from me and some other members of this podcast, but you know, he's looking in good nick at the moment. Paul's rolling his eyes. I saw your boxer size video, Paul. I know what you've been up to.
easy.
So Paul, I'll give you your take on this as well, because obviously we were debating during the week. Yang, you know, we definitely felt that Yang wasn't going to stay in the starting 11. Obviously Forrest gets the nod. It appears to be the right call by Brendan Rodgers, very clear and quick pre-match and post-match, depending on which interview you listen to, very quick to say that he's used him as much as the previous manager. So he was quite quick to say that, you know, I haven't left him out or ever, like, I'm just using him as much as the last big guy did. Paul, thoughts?
Well, it was a bit of a coin toss. There was an argument for either. I floated the idea, should he start last week? And you sort of persuaded me that he probably shouldn't. And I was sort of swayed by that.
I'm not a football manager.
I was sort of swayed by that, with the whole, you know, he's up against tiring legs and all of that. So maybe his stats are a bit overinflated. But as it turned out, to Rich's point, he passed the eye test ahead of it as one of the players in form. I think obviously we now go out a little bit after the immediate aftermath of people that sort of did their bit straight after the game. I don't think there's any doubt that he's cemented his pick for the Hearts game, at least. And there's an argument for saying, even if Maeda comes back either next week or the week after, then he reverts back to his traditional right-hand side, because...
Instead of Kuhn.
He's offered more than any other winger in the second half of the season, in the few cameos he's had, and now, you know, 70-odd... Well, he's basically played 70 minutes two games in a row, because even though he came off the bench and came off, but by the time he went through injury time in the full match, injury time in the first half of extra time, and came off a minute from the end, he's played 70 minutes against Aberdeen as well. So he's gone 70 minutes back-to-back. and he's been a key player in both games. So that was one debate, and you know Rodgers got it right based on the performance. The other debate was, you know, do we make a change at centre back? And you know, I think a lot of people, including myself, were advocating for that change, but also didn't think it would happen because Rodgers has been very loyal to Scales. And as anyone who listens to this more regularly than never will know, I'm not Scales. I've been Scales quite critical of Scales, and justifiably so. I'll stand by that. But also credit where credit's due. I thought he stood up and he had a pretty good game yesterday. And we'll probably get into the detail of individual player performances. But like Richard, I was pretty optimistic before the start. You know. You know, the cup tie was a bit hectic and all over the place and chaotic, but ultimately we've been on a bit of a run, and you know, every cliche, but every game, you know, you've got to win. So I just expected us to find a way to do it, and thankfully we did.
Yes, it was. I'd sort of convinced myself that Palmer was probably the preferred option. I mean, he's obviously coming back from injury, so maybe, again, that was part of the reason why Forrest, again, was, you know, in hindsight, the better selection. But I'm glad I was wrong because, you know, I think James Forrest was definitely the difference maker. But we'll get into the details around that. I'm just going to pull up some comments just regarding James Forrest's performance. We've got Patrick McLaughlin here saying there's talk about Forrest going to the Euros now too, and he's also saying here that the squad size has been increased from 22 to 25. I think Steve Clark would be daft.
I think it's actually 26. It's 26, I think.
Yeah, so. No, 26. It'd be daft not to take James Forrest because he'd give you that impact off the bench, can play in any of those front three positions. I know some people were saying maybe he could still play right wing back. I think that's maybe his days of doing that are probably gone, but I definitely think he gives you an option, and as an impact player, I think you'd be daft not to take him. Because the one thing our Scotland team lacks, I mean, obviously injuries are starting to mount up, but we're lacking goals, and you know he's clearly shown that he's got a capability for finding the back of the net. Maesh is just saying here that Forrest is a quicker runner with the ball than the rest of the Celtic wingers, and his stride length makes it harder for defenders to time their tackles. I'll take your word for that, Mahesh, but that's a very interesting step. There you go. I know. He's just full of fun facts.
Just the point about the Euros. Yeah. If you guys, we should all keep our phones on. There are so many injuries like kind of piling up, and James Forrest and all the rest of it. Like honestly, get down the training ground now, because I think that there's a realistic possibility that the phone will go off if you know something about, you know, anyway, maybe not. But aye, James Forrest, if there is a 26th, he's going to be there.
Well, true story, my personal trainer has just been selected for the Indonesian T20 cricket side, so he's off to play in that. So not a listener, but gee, if you are listening, congratulations, mate. All the best next week when you go and play some practice games. And I also threw up after doing 20 minutes of cardio, so I don't think I'll be getting a call up anytime soon. We're saying here that if Maeda's fit, him and Kyogo and James, the other front three, I think that's definitely the show at the moment. And this is an interesting comment here. Some recency bias among Celtic podcasts regarding Palmer. He's coming back from injury, yet has 11 goals, 13 assists and 37 appearances. I said he should start, Stephen. So yeah, not everyone's jumped on the Jamesy bandwagon, but obviously, you know, after the performance yesterday, it's understandable to see why we are raving about him. All right.
I think challenge there, just to pick up on Steve's point, it's a good point, but the challenge we've got with Palmer, and he's not alone, Cal McGregor will come on to, these players coming back from injury, we've got a real sort of dilemma, or the manager's got a dilemma in terms of the only way to get players up to speed is to play them, but every game's must win, and we're running out of time to get players up to match sharpness. So there's a real argument between, you know, do you try to play players up into fitness and form when you've got five games left, knowing that every game is pretty much must win? Or do you just go to who's fittest and most in form and play them, and knowing that you're then probably sidelining some of these other players? I haven't got a definitive answer on that, and I'm, you know, happy to, you know, chuck that around in more detail later. But that is the challenge with players like Palmer, who, you know, Stephen's right, he was the most effective forward player in the first half of the season. And then obviously he's picked up some injuries and been out for a bit and has never recaptured that. So it is a bit of a challenge there.
It certainly is. Richard, obviously, we weren't sure what Celtic team we were going to get. It's like the old Forrest Gump box of chocolates analogy. We started off pretty well, I felt, first 15 minutes, creating chances. You know, a couple of, you had Forrest cutting in, having some shots. You had Kroon cutting in with some shots.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Then the script sort of flipped probably for 10, 15 minutes and Dundee started getting a little bit more sort of pressure and at least sort of pinning his back a little bit, you know, creating a couple of chances. I remember one cross-ball effort that was reminiscent of the Aberdeen goals that we conceded last week.
Yep.
And then we finally obviously score and then we go in at the half 1-0. I was speaking to my dad today and I was sort of saying, well... Was that the bad half or was that the good half? Because it's like Celtic this season's like you have a good half and a bad half. And it was like half time ago, well, was that the good half or was that the bad half? It was hard to say. Yeah. How were you? What was your take on the first? We'll give you the first half first. So, first half, yeah. What was your overall thing?
Do you know, in a funny kind of way, it played out exactly how I expected it to. And I knew that it would be pretty nervy, it was going to be pretty tense. Celtic all season, it's not been a menu degustation, it's been, you know, egg and chips with a bit of black pudding and some tomato sauce and hoping for the best. The first half, I think, reasonably good. I thought Kuhn, I know Kuhn's got his detractors as well, I'm not going to champion him in this game, but I think he had a couple of decent efforts where he kind of cut inside and with a bit more power and shot would have probably scored. I thought we were exciting. I thought we were energetic. Dundee are no mugs. Like, they drew with Rangers for a reason, right? And Rangers, we won't talk about in this podcast too much, but, you know, they're an okay team. They're the main competitors for the league. Dundee held them. And
they've made top six.
Totally. And Bakayoko, the guy who I think he was the kind of chancellor, I think they targeted that on the back of the kind of the prevailing weakness from the cup final was, you know, back post and directed the balls in that kind of direction. He was a wee bit unlucky. So, yeah, first half, I genuinely thought that it was going to be a bit more tense and a bit more tetchy. I thought we played reasonably well, controlled it reasonably well. But yeah, Dundee are no mugs and they broke up play really quite well. If I can come to it and talk about it right now,
yeah,
what a sublime touch from Kyogo. I mean, it was a beautiful, I mean, he knew exactly what he was doing. When you see the pass coming in from Atati, there's a beautiful touch from Kyogo to tee it up for James Forrest. Knew exactly what it was, basically landed on his toe. Fabulous, really lovely finish. That was a really quality goal. And I breathe a sigh of relief.
Well, I think the commentary team of Chris Sutton and Ian Crocker were debating whether Kyogo actually meant that setup or not. And I've seen him try to play that spin to himself. So I'm not sure whether he did meet a tee up for Forrest or not. We'll never know. But I think for me with Forrest was the fact that he really hit it with not really much of a stride. It was kind of like quick feet, and just he has this ability, and he's done it a couple of times, once in the first half where he seemingly had no space whatsoever, but just is able to create a yard of space just through the quickness of his feet. And I think that translated the goal as well, because a lot of other players would have scoffed at that and, you know, tried to welly it or whatever, but he went, it was power and placement, and he knew exactly what he was doing, and it was a terrific finish. And, you know, in games like this, when we were blowing hot and cold, and we were coming off a bit of a cold spell when that goal went in, because, you know, we started really well, and then we didn't, it took a bit of quality, and it's really taken us this season quite a few times for that bit of quality. I think back to the Atati goal at Celtic Park, and it was just a bolt from beyond, or, you know, it took that extra bit of skill and panache and effort to sort of get that ball in the back of the net. And then it changes the game then, because then you're 1-0 up and then you start going then. Paul, what was your take on the first half? Because obviously, as I said, it was sort of, you know, we saw both sides. One thing I maybe want you to pick up on as well is I noticed Kuhn Elidors looked dangerous. Like they had a replacement left back in because that Beck was out injured. And I really thought Elidors that Kuhn was really going to tear this substitute fullback apart. And then we kind of played it all down the left after that. And he never really got much for looking. I don't know. Take it away.
Yeah, the left back, I think he was Owen as well. So Owen Beck was out and it's Owen Dodgson, I think Dodgson, who was in his place. Yeah, you're right. So early on, we got the ball to Kuhn early and allowed him the space to isolate the left back. Twice he cut in on him. Once he pulled him quite wide, cut in on him and had a dig. The second one was even better. The left back was tucked in a wee bit more, but he just a good quick shift of feet, cut in again, which to be honest, he does nearly all every time. So 95% of the time you'd say he probably cuts in. But for whatever reason, the fullback got himself in a mess and fell over. And that opened up the space. And he drilled a really good shot. And the keeper makes a good save, but he pams it in a dangerous area, but there's no one following up on it. It eludes Kyogo and I think Forrest and
Riley else becoming a match.
Yeah, wouldn't be right. And then the first one, yeah, Matt Riley's nicking in on it, but a goalkeeper just gets ahead of it. I think the mistake we made after that was there's sort of twofold. One, we didn't supply Kuhn enough. And two, when we did get the ball down that side, and we did continue to push down the right for that early period, we flooded that area with other players. So AJ was in the mix. Whether it was they were sort of crowding the space and drawing other defenders around. You know, even a stop clock strike twice a day. And Peter Grant made the point actually in Celtic TV commentary that we were dragging other defenders into that area and therefore blocking up the space. And he was spot on. You know, if we just left, and he obviously made a reference to Davy Provan in 1985 and all of that. Of course he did, speak years. But, you know, he's right. You know, he was basically commenting back in the day, Davy Hay would say to the rest of them, give it to Provan and leave him alone. Keep out of his way and he'll rip them and then he'll get the ball in the box. And Kuhn showed that intent early on and then we just overcrowded that space and didn't allow him to isolate the defender. They also worked back and sort of realised there was an error there, you know, a bit of a danger there. But when they were sort of pulling defenders in there and doubling up, that's where we should be shifting it more quickly because there must be space somewhere else if they've got additional defenders in that area. And that's what we were disjointed again in midfield. I think we started really well. There was loads of, so there's both Kuhn hits, Forest Skies won even earlier than that. Hatate, which isn't even in the highlights and hasn't really been mentioned in a lot of places, has a gilt edge chance early on. Mm-hmm. Jamesy does a little flick to himself. Yep. Brilliant bit of skill. Gets round, crosses it in, and then a false attack, basically 5 yards out. And yes, it's sitting up a bit, but he's got to bury that, and he puts it past the post. That's a gilt edge chance, and allow, you know, that we should have really. And there's the Taylor does really well to get on the back post, and so he's in the inside right channel, and he heads across, and the keeper makes himself big, and I think he might hit a bit of his boot and a bit of his hand, and he manages to keep it out. So we're piling up. They're not all, you know, must score, you know, glaring misses. But there's a continuous pressure building, and you just thought something was coming. And just as that was sort of coming to a head, we lost the grip of the midfield. They gained some composure. They hunted in packs in midfield. And they basically, from then, they made three or four half-decent chances. The ones that Richard was talking about earlier, sort of throwing it at the back post, Bakayoko should have done better with one that he just sort of bounced off him. I don't think, you know, don't know why he didn't expect it, because it skipped over the top of Scales again, and it just kind of bounced off his leg, and Hart was grateful to sort of pick it up. And there were a few others that were just starting to get some space. And yeah, as you picked up on, as they were just getting a foothold in the match, we score, and it's kind of out of nowhere. I'll take your point that I wasn't 100% sure whether it was a miscontrol or a control for himself or a nice little knockback. Having watched it back again today, I'd give him the benefit of doubt. he'd certainly look into spinning behind, and he's not going to spin. He's not going to spin in behind on his own flick because it's going backwards. So if he's not trying to tee up the shot, he's certainly spinning in behind, hoping to get a little 1-2 going. So I think he is trying to knock it off. But Forrest is a fantastic striker. He just doesn't hesitate, and it's a great connection. He smashes it in the bottom corner, and from there we should have really sort of pushed on, and we didn't. We kind of huffed and puffed and sort of fell out. I think the other key thing we haven't touched on yet in the first half is McGregor had a good 15 minutes, the same as everyone as part of that team, and then he really fell away. He dropped out of the game badly, to the point where a mixture of form and fitness. There's a really big decision for Rodgers to make in the Hearts game, because he was well off the pace, and we'll come on to the second half, but we didn't start well in the second half, and he was all at sea, as we were as a team. But he's the anchor of the midfield, and as we said here before, because we get so little from the wings at the moment, if we don't get that midfield three firing, we give other teams an opportunity to start dominate the ball and sort of cause us problems, and kind of that's where we were, I think, for certainly the back end of the first half, and then obviously into the second.
It's such a dilemma, isn't it? Because I think that Iwata, when he came on, actually did reasonably well and was reasonably solid. And we've spoken about before how Iwata and Carmack are just different players. But if Carmack is not fit and you've got the potential to anchor that role, if you like, in front of the defence, then maybe he is someone who could or should be a first choice, with Carmack coming on for a latter part of the game. You can make a view. I think that those manager selection choices are tough, but Jamesy has made himself absolutely loud and clear on form, playing well, playing at pace. I think that has given us a dimension that we didn't have even a fortnight ago.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. To pick up on your Cal McGregor point there, Paul, I agree. My concern with Cal Mack isn't so much that it's a getting back to fitness thing. I actually think his Achilles injury is still there, and they are managing it week by week, and he's playing under pain, because he looked all sorts of agony when he finally did come off around about the 60-minute mark. We'll get into the second half in a second, but I honestly think he's playing through the pain barrier at the moment, and I've had Achilles type pain in the past. It's just, it can be excruciating, and you've got obviously the concern that if you accelerate away too quickly that you're going to rupture it again, but then just that constant nagging pain in the back of your leg, you're never going to be 100%. So initially I thought, well, maybe it's just a fitness thing, in a couple of weeks he'll be better, but this is his third game back to start, and one off the bench for against the Huns, and similar pattern, like fading out very quickly. And I agree, Paul, like, you know, the first 15 minutes fine, and then he became pretty, you know, non-existent, and he did cop a pretty hefty tackle, which I'll get you to talk about, because I unfortunately missed that in real time, and then I haven't been able to see a replay anywhere of it yet. But it's a concern, and it's one of these things where you mentioned it before, Paul, talking about picking players on form, picking players who are fit, because you can't afford to give players time, because these are all must-win games. And I know one of the lads here said, oh, if we win the next two games, we'll win the league. But you've got to look at it and say, well, what's the best team to get a result against Hearts next week? And Iwata has got to come into the reckoning for that, because again, the second half here, but he came on, and Hatate came on to a game when Iwata was playing, because he knew he had cover, and Iwata was just doing the simple thing, but he was mopping up and looking pretty effective doing it. So, you know, we talked about scales. He seems to be getting a game because he's a Rodgers pick. He's a Rodgers favourite. Narosti can't seem to get a look in at the moment, whether he's a better player or not. You know, is he going to do the same thing with Cal Mack based on the fact that he's captain and his leadership, and you're going to play him regardless of how much pain he's in? Or are you going to say, well, actually, I need to look after him and look after the rest of the team and say, well, you know, is a latter the better choice there? And it's probably more of a question later in the podcast. So I'll probably get you both to have a little mull on that, and we'll come back to that. So, Paul, at halftime, we're 1-0 up. Like you say, we've had a few gilt-edged chances. They probably had that one at the back stick. But you're thinking 1-0, okay, we can build on that. And then we come out in the second half and we're as flat as a pancake. Absolutely red rank rotten. Then you're starting to think, oh, the first half was a good half because we were all at sea, couldn't string two passes together. I think we must have conceded about 6 or 7 corners in the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half. You just felt ominous, like a goal was coming, because we were just putting ourselves under so much pressure. Did you see that coming? I mean, obviously, I mean, at the moment, like, who can tell what a Celtic performance is going to be like?
Well, but... yeah, that's the thing. You know, you're right. You've come in, you've got the lead. You probably should be further ahead. You've weathered a little bit of a storm. You've got a chance to sort of regroup. Surely you come out firing and try and put the game to bed. But instead, I assume Tony Docherty got a message to his backroom team, because he seemed to be, I don't know if he was suspended, but he was up in the stand
he was on the phone.
So he wouldn't be allowed in the dressing room at half time if he's suspended. So he's obviously he's on the phone pretty much to his backroom staff. Whatever he's relayed to them, and they've rallied them, they came out absolutely firing. In the first half, they were allowing Scales and Cameron Carter-Vickers to just stroll up to the halfway line with zero pressure on the ball, and they were concerned with, you know, putting the pressure on it at the next forward pass when we were sort of on the cusp of their final third. Came out of the block second half, they weren't having any of that. They pressed us deep in our half, in packs, high pressure, high intensity, all the way back to, you know, our defenders and Hart, and there was a few hairy moments, and that continued on and off throughout the second half. But they just didn't allow us to settle, and we were a wee bit at sea. Obviously, McGregor had dropped out of the game by then. We were getting strung out and disjointed in midfield, and they were winning more of the ball, and then they'd clearly set their stall out to just look for set pieces. So any kind of sort of pull, tug, contact, they were going down. And then obviously they were looking for long throws, they were shelling them in. And you're right that, you know, they collected a number of corners. And there was a few early on that we sort of rode our luck a little bit. There was one whip to the back post, and, you know, I think Matt O'Reilly got under it, and McGee came in at the back post, and it's a pretty poor header. He should do better. And they were coming in from both sides, and it was the same. They were targeting the back post, and we weren't really doing a brilliant job in that first 15, 20 minutes. It was probably 15 minutes or so. In that period, to your earlier question, McCormack takes an absolute sore one right on the sort of top of the foot, metatarsal, towards the kind of front of the ankle joint. We get a free kick, but that's it. John Beaton is hardly any distance away at that point. And look, the only, you know, he studs up, he's miscontrolled it, and then Carl's nicked in, and he's come in and he's hit him studs up on the top of the foot. Now, it's 100% a booking. Obviously, VAR can't get involved for a booking, but Beaton's right there, and his linesman's, 10, 15 yards away? Between them, they should see that. And on another day, given some of the decisions we've seen, and I'm not saying this is a red card, but on some, given some of the sort of reds we've seen this season, you only have to go back to Yang at Tynecastle for a ridiculous red. The fact that that doesn't even get a booking is just another example of, you know, certain referees just turning a blind eye to stuff. Because let's be honest, if one of your central midfielders takes up a booking in the first few minutes of the second half, then he's got to walk a tightrope. If he gets a pass on that, happy days. The only booking in the whole game was for Joe Hart for time wasting. And there's been quite a lot doing the rounds on social media going, I didn't realise you could get booked in Scottish football as a goalkeeper time wasting. Because anyone that watches a home game at Celtic Park knows that that's absolute standard fare.
Yeah.
And every week it gets the Dundee
keeper in the first half must have held onto the ball for about 20 seconds. He's standing there, and I'm going, it's a 6-second rule. He's taking at least double that, if not three times that. And I'm like, well, at what point do you blow up for an indirect free kick? Anyway, my Matson here, he agrees with you, Paul. He said it was a booking, then beat him, didn't think so, and then, yeah, he books Hart for time wasting, yes. Richard, what was your thoughts on that tackle? Did you think booking all day, or what's the go?
All day, yeah, all day. And I think the other point I was going to raise was that UEFA, for the forthcoming 2024 Jamboree in Germany, for the referees, funnily enough, there are no Scottish referees on that list. I rest my case.
Yes, because apparently it was VAR that was holding them back. No, it's just the fact that they're shite. Patrick McLaughlin, he said the corners were troublesome from the D, but who scored for most corners in the league. There you go. I didn't know that stat, so thank you for that. Richards, it was crying out for a change because it just clearly we had not started well. And I'm thinking if we don't make a couple of substitutions here, we're in all sorts of bother because it just, the writing was on the wall. I was sort of advocating for maybe Bernardo coming on, but Iwata gets the nod for Cal McGregor. And then the other change was, I've just
had a blank.
Yeah, it's 62 minutes. So how are you sort of feeling by that point and take us up to the
just
the goal,
quietly,
I guess.
Yeah. Quietly anxious because I'd watched Rangers really struggle against St Mirren beforehand. St Mirren played really well against them. I saw the kind of same sort of flow from Dundee, and they had worked out. It's like Paul saying, you know, that there was some tactical stuff there. They learned from what was going on in the first half. They came, they pressed, they actually made things much more difficult for us. Second goal, listen, that came from nowhere really. A pocket picked and James Forrest essentially being James Forrest, but also running through challenges, a clever exchange. But he had a lot of work to do to score that second goal. And I have to say, at 67 minutes, I breathed a sigh of relief. And I thought, in Perth, on a Sunday evening, I can go to my bed knowing that Celtic are 2-0 up 67 minutes into the game with some sensible substitutions. Wasn't necessarily how it panned out.
I love your confidence, Richard. I really do, but I don't even feel like you've been watching the games this season. It's like,
no, I have. Like, I have. It's not
been a comfortable scoreline.
It's delusional, right? It's just, yeah.
It's wishful thinking, because I thought, you know, one of these Sundays, I'm really a nice, comfortable evening on the couch and really going to bed, relaxed, going, oh, that was a good win, Celtic, but not quite. Paul, picked you up on the goal. There's a bit of pressure there from Ida and Hatate, and then Forrest gets in behind, and on his weaker foot, he doesn't mince words. He just drives it low and hard through the keeper's legs. 2-0. Again, probably slightly against the run of play, really, because, you know, we'd start steadied the ship with the substitutions, but, you know, they definitely had started the better of the two teams in the second half. But at 2-0, you're thinking, surely, like, we're like, yeah, come on, like, well, let's go, let's just see this out. But obviously, you know, there was a chance to attack that I'll let you pick up on, and then obviously it goes down the other end. So take it away.
Yeah, well, Forrest actually provides the pressure in the first place. So he puts the pressure on the defender, gets a toe on it, it breaks the Hatate. He makes Forrest stays on the move, which is great, and Hatate slides a great ball in. But there's two defenders there who should absolutely between them deal with it. And it's sort of Keystone Cop stuff, and they're sort of running into each other. There's no communication between the two of them. They both slide in for the same ball. Somehow, with two big lads sliding in, neither of them stops it. It kind of bobbles its way through. Jamesy's kept his run going, and it breaks his weaker foot, but he doesn't break stride, and he just smashes it underneath the keeper, and it's a really good finish. And yeah, at that point, you're thinking, well, we can breathe out a little bit of breathing space. And, you know, we weathered the storm at the half. We've made a couple of good tactical substitutions. And on them, yeah, Tomoki Iwata kind of gave us a bit more solidity. He's never going to be sort of, you know, as good as Cal at his best in terms of picking forward passes and driving play forward. But he probably is a more natural sort of holding sweeper in front of the back four type of player. And he was an odd misplaced pass and the odd sort of a little bit of looking for extra time, which we've seen before. But generally, he was neat and tidy and he was in the right position. And he definitely freed up Hatate to get further forward and sort of dictate the play a little bit more and impact the play more and be where we really need him to be, which is further up the park where he can influence the attack and play. And Adam Ida didn't have his greatest game by any stretch of the imagination since he came in, and we'll come on to his crucial contribution in a little bit. But what he did is give us an out ball. We were really getting pressed in and held in, and we were choking up possession. We were giving away corners and throw-ins. And Ida allowed, and we still didn't take the option often enough. Still, sometimes players wanted to overplay in our back line and get closed out and lose the ball in dangerous positions. But a couple of times, a few players just went, actually, we've got a different option here. Throw it long. The big man can hold it up and stuff. And early on, there was a couple of times he just got a bit too cute and he tried little flicks and they didn't come off, and we sort of gave away possession cheaply. Really, at that point, all we needed him to do was hold the ball up and wait for support and then spin in behind and go again. So there's a bit to work with there, but Ida definitely gives us an alternative option when it's not really working out or we're starting to come under some heat. And so those two players did steady the ship. And from 62 minutes, there's 5 minutes till we score. In that time, I think we pick up a first corner of the second half, and we just start to put a few little bits of play together in their half, which was good. So I wouldn't say the goal was necessarily coming, but we'd certainly sort of weathered the worst of the storm at that point. And then we score, and shortly thereafter, Hitati, you know, receives the ball just on the edge of the box from Alistair Johnson, shifts his feet really well and cracks a great strike. And he's really unlucky. It comes flush back off the post, and he almost hit it too well. So the power it comes back at sort of eludes everyone who might be able to knock in a rebound, and the danger's passed. And yeah, just when you sort of, I know we've not done it and we've talked about this, we've not been able to close games out. Just when you think, you know, that would sort of put the tin lid on it, you know, they creep back into it and we give them a lifeline. Let's be honest, we give them a lifeline. It's a set piece, but it's an absolute shambolic goal to lose.
Adam Ida not covering himself in any glory, doing what centre forwards do in the 6-yard box, putting the ball in the back of the net, just the wrong end. A little bit panicked, probably in hindsight, should just have left it for Joe Hart, who had it well and truly covered, but decides to have a swing at it and unfortunately shanks it and completely changes the direction and ends up at the back of the net 2-1, Dundee lifeline, and it makes the last 15 minutes a little bit nervier than it should have been. Richard, have you ever done one of those in your lifetime? Or?
No comment. I think but having been a centre forward and been in that position, I definitely know that I should not be there. Okay, but I see that Portales actually he was credited with the goal, but I can't.
Yeah, I'm not convinced it was even on target. Yeah. Like it might have been squeezing towards the inside of the post, but it's pretty generous. It was roughly in the vague area, but I'd have said it was potentially going by the post. And this is like Joe Hart needs to take a little. You know, Joe Hart's been on a great sort of run. He probably does need to take a little bit of blame here, because again, communication, he could just he's a big lad. He was joining in the sing songs with the fans afterwards, and then you could hear him from the fans recording, so we know he can bellow. He wants to just be screaming at him to get out of the way of that, because there's no pressure on him, there's no one behind him. It's literally going safely through a heart or even behind for a goal kick until the intervention. And whilst the pitch looked pretty good and the weather has been decent, we know that the places that pitch suffered the most during that really bad weather that they were having and the pitch wasn't up to it was in and around the box areas. And so even though the pitch looked green and probably okay, it's bound to have been bobbly and
rough,
rough and generally a bit crap around there, especially in the penalty boxes and 6-yard boxes where it's going to have a lot of, you know, over contact from set pieces and stuff. So just even accounting for all of that, it's a pretty honking effort at a clearance. You know, just if you're gonna have a crack at it, just put your laces through. I don't know what he's doing. Full fresh air, and shanks it past Hart. He'd be better off just leaving it be. But you're right. After that sort of 74 minutes, so with added time, you're looking at 20 minutes of a bit nerve shredding. But in the end, actually did okay and saw it out, which we failed to do quite a few times. So a bit of credit where it's due there.
I just need to go back and actually have a look how many games a season we've won by one goal, because it kind of feels like we either batter teams or we've dropped points. So I would need to go back and compare that and do an analysis between this season and the last couple of seasons, just out of curiosity. I mean, I don't know if it's statistically significant or not, but that might be some homework for me this week if I get the time. Richard, what were you going to say about it? Sorry, I cut you off there.
No, I was just going to say, I didn't get a chance to watch it back until this evening, but the last 50 minutes, I thought we defended reasonably well. Mm. And Liam Scales, the much maligned Liam Scales, sorry to say this, Paul, I thought he was all right, actually. You know, I think that he acquitted himself reasonably well those last quarter of the game. And Brendan said afterwards as well that it was, you know, it was one of those ones that you'd almost kind of just dogging out, because you know that you've just got to get the points. And yeah, it was tight, but I'm relieved more than anything. As the season goes on and the closer it gets, and the number of times we've sat here thinking, and you've done it more than I have, that kind of which Celtic is coming out today, it's just a sense of relief that we got the points.
Yeah, absolutely.
On you go.
No, you're not far away.
I was just going to say, yeah, like Richard, you're right. And as I said towards the top of the show, I've been very critical of Scales, and I stand by it. However, when you're critical of somebody, you've got to praise them when they step up as well. And his performance has dropped off since the turn of the year. But I guess that last 15, 20 minutes is tailor made for. Where his strengths lie. He's good in the air. He throws his body, great at blocks. He just defends his area. He stood up and he won the majority of the balls that came into the box when they were being shelled in from throw-ins and corners. And really, it's obviously nerve-wracking at the time, because, you know, the season could start to slip away if they get an equaliser, or, you know, worse still, do they get an equaliser and then there's still time for us to shoot ourselves in the foot and they could score a winner. But actually, if you take all that emotion out of it, they didn't really create anything in that of the last 20 minutes. There was pressure, but they didn't really carve out any real good chance. I think the best chance was the kid Mellon, who came off the bench, had a header from a really quite tight angle and was nowhere near getting that on target. And that was another one sort of hopefully lobbed to the back post. And I think that Dundee just sort of run out of ideas. I thought they, you know, for that middle period of the first half and the beginning of the second half, they actually look threatening. McCowan's a great player, and you know, we really never got to grips with him for a period in the first half, and we allowed him too much space for parts of the early part of the second half. And Doherty's done a great job with him. You're right, they're up in the top six on merit. Yes, they're a team that we've done really well against this year. The net score something like 18-19-3, I think, or something like that across the games against them this season. But you can see that they've just tightened up the defence. They've come on a bit of form. It wasn't a surprise, even a freak goal, but it wasn't a surprise they got a goal. I think they'd gone two games in a row without scoring, 2-0-0 draws. I think you've got to go back to at least a season or the season, beginning of the season, since they've gone three games without scoring. So it was likely, it was likely they were going to get a goal. So I think, you know, when you sort of survey the whole scene, I think there's a lot of stress and a lot of sort of concern in the fan base in general, because again, it's disjointed and we don't look great and we sort of, you know, stagger our way across the line to a 2-1 victory. We're going to be staggering across. If we win this title, we're staggering across the line to the title. It's every game at a time. It's every half at a time. And we just need to get the games won. And yeah, we are probably two games away from winning them. And this team has sort of raised itself when it's really needed to, for the most part. So whilst there are concerns, and there have been concerns all season, so none of them are new, I think if you'd given us this a few months back, a win against Hearts and a win against Rangers, both at home, back-to-back, to pretty much seal the title, I think most Celtic fans would have bit your hand off for that. And I'm sitting here still reasonably confident that there's enough there to get it done. But it's one game at a time. And to the point that you made, Anthony, it really is, I think, about getting the best team out for each game and forgetting about the next game.
I've been watching a fair amount of Great British Bake Off this week, and Paul Hollywood's favourite quote is it substance over style or style over substance? And I think we're just going to need substance over style. Like, it's just getting it done any way, shape or form. It might look crap, but as long as it tastes good at the end, then so be it. And I think that's kind of where we're at. We've got 130 live at the we're 130 people live at the moment. If you can please make sure you like this episode on the YouTube, just to let everyone like-minded Celts find us online. We'll be with you every week until the end of the season. So another four pods after this one to go, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Not that I'm counting down or anything. And obviously we're on all the socials above there as well, so please give them a follow. All three of us are also on Twitter or X, but we still call it Twitter because X is daft. And yes, if you follow us, we'll probably follow you back. And yes, anyway, all good. So with that in mind, I just pulled up a quote here from my father, not me, but he was just saying here that why can't we change to 4-4-2, get control of the midfield and push forward? I think the point he's trying to make here is that Kyogo and Ida on the park at the same time. I guess we've sort of have tried that at some point during the season, but any chance that we could see that again between now and the end of the season, guys, or are we kind of just, we're just going to keep lumping it and doing what we're doing?
I don't think so.
Not going to happen.
I think the issue with 4-4-2 is, you know, well, one, we don't really play it, so it's not going to come naturally. And two, you could play it as a diamond and narrow, but then where did your width come from? You're then reliant on Alistair Johnson and Greg Taylor doing even more. And look, keeping Greg Taylor away from the defence is no bad idea, but I think, you know, you want to get more attacking options on the pitch, and I don't think 4-4-2, weirdly, I don't think 4-4-2 does that in terms of getting supply. Yes, the wing play hasn't been amazing this season, but one of the reasons we haven't got the most out of Kyogo this season is because that wing play hasn't been great. If you then take wingers away, and then you've got, look, they're physically they're different, but they do try and sort of spin into the same spaces. Ida likes to spin off the last defender as well. Yes, he's bigger and stronger and can hold it up, and he's better, you know, at doing that. But that's just a facet of his game. He's not just a big lumpy target man, and they could play off each other. They will want to spin into similar spaces. So I think for now, it's sort of continue as you are. Kyogo didn't have his best game. He's still involved in the first goal. He didn't have an amazing game against Aberdeen either, but he has been in a run of form, and in the big games he gets you goals. So for me, he's got to be the first choice, and Ida offers you something different, as he did again on the weekend. So I think we'll continue with Rodgers' preferred formation, maybe some changes in game to try and close stuff out. Obviously, he tried to bring on a third centre back against Aberdeen, managed to bypass all three of them, it was a waste of time. But in general, I think you'll see the preferred formation continue. One little shout out: I was surprised to see Hatate and O'Reilly go the full distance, particularly on the back of extra time. I think it was crying out for the industry of Bernardo at some point in the last 10, 15, 20 minutes, just to get a bit more energy in there. Hatate must still be coming back to fitness, and O'Reilly's been flogged all season. So either one of them could have taken a break for me and just got, you know, Bernardo's still got something to offer in this run in. He's had some crucial contributions. I just think it's a bit daft when we don't use the subs. We only use three. And I think that tells you that there maybe isn't the trust factor in there in terms of some of those players. But I think Bernardo's sure enough that he could have filled in for one of those guys, you know, in the last 10, 15 minutes. Just more energy. They were clearly flagging. And when you're back to the wall and try to hold on to a 1-0 victory, I think it would have made some sense to throw him in the mix.
I think also Kyogo at Celtic Park is a different beast. He has seemed to have scored most of his goals at home this season. So I think having him next to home games, hopefully he can get in the score sheet and he'll go a big way to sealing this title for us. Probably one last point I just wanted to pick up is just a point I made earlier, Richards, Cal Mack, do you think he should start against Hearts or do you think Samoki Iwata comes in?
My heart says I would love him to start, but my head says I think Iwata should start. And based on just some of that chat about the kind of 4-3-3, 4-4-2, which the 4-4-2, like I agree, would just never work. But because we just don't have that style of player in the squad at the moment. If you look at like who's been on the field and who's been on the bench, it's just not a style that we can play. But yeah, Iwata, I just think he's been a safe pair of hands. He does the simple things well. Yes, he doesn't have that same attacking drive. But if you've got Jamesy looking fit, well, that gives you a dimension in attack that we've not necessarily had. And I think we've got Hatate who's come back and has played really, really well. I thought it was really good to see him play the 90, actually. And I would have given Matt O'Reilly a bit of a break, actually, for Paolo Bernardo.
That's fair.
I think the thing about McGregor is really the medical team have got a real big job this week because I agree with you, Anthony. They must be nursing him because he's that far off the pace pretty quickly. And I don't really see why we get if they didn't think it was so crucial that he's on. I originally thought that he needed games for fitness, but I'm now on the fence about that as well. But if he doesn't need games for fitness and he is just nursing through and he's not contributing a level that he can and we would want and should, you know, yes, there's an element of just seeing him on the team sheet gives the players around him a boost and potentially concerns the opposition. But if they know he's not 100%, a lot of that boost is pretty much negated. So I think there might be a bit about, you know, when a senior player says, yeah, I've got it in me, just, you know, I'm fit for it, I push through. Maybe there's surgery to come in the closed season. But that's a pretty big call as well, because he's a key player for Scotland as well. Not that Brendan Rodgers needs to worry about Scotland, but for as him as a player, you would think, well, yes, I want to get this done for the club, but I also want to be available for that. It's potentially, he's maybe got one more major tournament in him after this. Maybe, you know, what is he, 30, maybe. 31? Yeah. Maybe one more.
Remember Scotland didn't usually qualify for major tournaments. This might be his only major tournament.
Well, this is true. That's a fair point.
Well, come on. This is the best we've had in years. So but my point is, okay, like if he's like, I could see if he was going straight to surgery after the season was done, sort of nursing through on sort of cortisone and whatever else. Mm. So I don't know. It's a bit of a weird one. Rodgers and the medical team and Cal himself, you know, he needs to be holding his hands up if he's not, because he's definitely not. He wasn't on it. He shouldn't have been on the Rangers game. He was okay for bits of the Aberdeen game, but faded badly, and we looked better when Tomoki came on. And the same happened here. So you'd expect some sort of uptick in the extra weeks of training and some game time, but we'll see. I would absolutely be content if Tomoki Iwata starts, because now Hatate is back and starting to fire. I think that three can work pretty well and probably better even than it would if McGregor's not going to be fit.
And on his best form. Pete McGee was just agreeing with their poll, saying that he's not seen that much improvement, so it's a bit of a concern. I agree. A couple of comments here. So John Clement said, that's the first mention of a Great British Bake Off in a Celtic podcast. Yes, we're breaking all sorts of records here, mate. And then John Clement saying, just like our board, it's all about the dough. I thought that was quite funny. Well done. And then Michael Ross just saying here, every game is a cup final, especially the cup final. Yes, Michael, that's a very apt comment. And then we've got Bethan here as well. Great pod, gentlemen. Thank you. Who's the snitch? Alrighty, we are quickly running out of time. So let's just do our man of the match very quickly. We're all going to say it on the count of three. 1, 2, 3.
James Forrest.
All right. Okay. Great. We've waxed lyrical. Brendan Rodgers waxed lyrical. Great performance. He made the right call starting him. I'm happy. Stand corrected on that point. Did well. Took his two goals well. Like you say, Richard, gave us that dimension, so that's good. And like I say, gives us another option out wide for the run into the end of the season. So very, very good there. Richard, have you come up with a recommendation? I know you were strapping before the thing.
I'm still watching Boat Story. It's a BBC thing. It's amazing. Boat Story. There's another blue lights are back on. Northern Ireland police drama. I know that I talk about this like because I keep catching dropping into things every so often. But Boat Story, BBC, SBS, and Blue Lights every time because that's all I get to do in my spare time now.
My wife won't let me watch Blue Lights until the whole season's on the SBS because she doesn't want it. She wants to binge it. I thought it was week by week. No, it's the whole thing's
No, no. It one episode came out and then the whole rest came out straight up like the week after.
My weekend is sorted.
Yeah, so my wife wouldn't let me binge it. I sometimes get two episodes in the same day if I'm lucky. But so we're up to episode four. I finished episode four and we got to watch the start of episode five because of something big happened at the end of episode four. All right, just to see how that panned out. So yeah, we've got two eps to go. Basically, but yeah, it's great. It's lifted off where it's continued where it left off last season. So yeah, it's really good.
Oh, I'll get that.
Yeah, so you got that for the weekend or whenever. Do you want mine?
Go for it.
Music review or recommendation as usual. I usually try and do ones that are relatively recent, and I suppose this is, it's 18 months old, somehow slipped past me entirely. Broken Bells is the sometime side project of James Mercer from The Shins and Brian Burton, otherwise known as Danger Mouse. They've previously had two albums, self-titled, and then After the Disco, I think the second album was called, which had that Holding On to Love song, which was massive. That's the best part of 10 years ago now. But in late 2022, they released their third album, which is called Into the Blue. And it is a cracker, really good. Mercer's weird, sort of slightly quirky vocals sit really well with the production that Danger Mouse has done, and yeah, it's just really good. So yeah, Broken Bells, third album, Into the Blue, is my music recommendation of the week.
Very good. I don't really have anything this week, so I'm just going to leave it there. Thank you very much. We're up to 141 live. Everyone's having a good little conversation in the chat, which is great. Great to start, you know, having a bit of a community as we do this run into the end of the season, hopefully a double on the line that we can clinch a couple of weeks' time. We will be back next week as Celtic takes on Hearts at Celtic Park. So we'll be back with all the analysis on that one. And I think, unless anyone else has anything left to say, that's all there is to say. So hail, hail.
Hail, hail.
Hail, hail.
Podcast Network. Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.